Welcome to Gal Pals Watch. I'm Alicia, and it's just me today, actually. Sarah had some technical difficulties, and this is a podcast where we discuss queer women in film, inclusively defined. And today we are discussing the film Lust, Life, Love with co-director, writer, producer, and lead actress, Stephanie Sellers. Hey, Stephanie, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thank you for having me on.
Thank you. So you are a chronicler and participant in New York's LGBTQ scene, and you wrote the Lust Life column in the New York Press, which has, I guess, was a big inspiration for this film.
Yeah. That was many years ago at the time when there were still alt weekly newspapers that people actually read, you know,
and like held.
Yeah, you pulled them out of the plastic boxes on street corners, and you'd read them on the subway or
yes,
wherever, in a cafe over your latte. And yeah, that I was writing about my sexual and romantic experiences dating. It's mostly a personal column, but I also like wrote about topics, various topics in a more general way. And then I was in film school a few years later after the column ended. Well, the newspaper actually folded. And in film school, I was focusing on screenwriting. And in my screenwriting class, we had to come up with ideas for screenplays. And I had a few of them. One of them was about a polyamorous woman. I'd always wanted to see this portrayed in film since I had been practicing this in my life and hadn't seen a film like deal with it realistically and authentically. The main character I had was like a lawyer, like actually more based on a friend of mine. And when I was in a meeting with my advisor and telling him a bit about my own experience, he was like, "Oh, why don't you make her a writer, a columnist, and make her like more like you? And that sounds more interesting." I'm like, "Okay, sure." And that's the inspiration. Yeah,
that's interesting that you were originally going to make Veronica a lawyer. Mm-hmm. I think having her be a blogger does add a great layer to it, because you're able to get that like exposition and like hear her thoughts, which like her writing essentially, which I really loved. You had some fantastic lines in there, like, "If I can find a little bit of the one in each person I fall for, and they see a little of the one in me, what can be more romantic than that?" Which I thought was really lovely.
Yeah, and I guess she could have spoken that to someone, but it's such a crafted line, and maybe in conversation wouldn't come out so beautifully. And
yeah.
I also love, well, there's the opportunity for interiority, as you said, to have access to the character's thoughts. Which often contradict her actions. Mm-hmm. So that's like a whole other benefit to having that, the blog and the voiceover.
Yeah. And for the audience who might not have seen the film quite yet, one of the synopsises is, when a bisexual polyamorous sex blogger falls madly in love with a monogamous man, she comes face to face with the frightening truth about herself, which I think is, you know, you hinted to that when you say what she writes about is not always what she does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think that's humanity, right? I mean,
sure.
Like we all have our,
yeah. There you go. We all have our personas, I was going to say. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. We all have this, like, maybe this idealized version of the way we want to live.
Mm-hmm.
But doing it is really hard work, and
Mm-hmm.
we're not perfect. So,
Yep.
I definitely was able to sympathize with Veronica, though I am not a, I don't practice polyamory. I have plenty of friends who do, and I live in Washington State, and Seattle is the dating scene is very poly friendly. So I have a ton of friends who are poly. I did try, you know, polyamory and dating and things like that, and it just wasn't for me. And but it, there's so much that goes into it that you need to be able to, you know, be secure in yourself and communicate with others, which we see in this film how difficult that is.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's part of the challenge for
Yeah,
sure.
so it seems like this film, Lust, Life, Love, came out of basically not having representation. What kinds of representation of like polyamory relationships had you seen in the media before?
I had seen the movie Short Bus by John Cameron Mitchell,
Right.
which was his first film before he did Hedwig and Angry Inch and Rabbit Hole. Yeah, that film was quite a breakthrough for polyamorous people, also people exploring their sexuality and group sex, and it was very raw because he had actors actually having sex and like not like non-actors in the scenes, in the play party scenes, and some explicit sex in the film. And it was a very diverse cast as well. So that was an inspiration for sure. But that was more focused on like multiple characters, and it focused on like a central place, this one party that everyone went to and converged, and so I was more interested in in the relationships, and also just I was just drawing from my experience as well. Let's see, Vicky Cristina Barcelona with the Woody Allen film. It is about a triad relationship, short-lived, but two women and a man trying to have some kind of triad relationship. That's, and yeah, it's like, if you Google polyamory films, there are a lot of films that will come up that like deal with it kind of, maybe not, it's not the central part of the movie, but it is kind of touched upon.
And I think, as you were saying with Short Bus, you know, it's more of an ensemble piece, and you know, looking at something as directly, you know, as you did, with a particular person and their relationships with others is, yeah, I think even something in, you know, Vicky Barcelona is not necessarily touched upon. It's been a long time since I've seen that film, but so what was the casting process like for you? You have like incredible chemistry with these folks. So if you
Yeah,
wouldn't mind sharing about
chemistry was definitely a criteria.
that.
I was playing Veronica, and like as an actor, you can fake it because that's part of acting, but it's nice to have that natural chemistry, actor chemistry, even like real sexual chemistry or just human chemistry with the people you're doing scenes with. And so I had a casting director, and she, for the principal roles, she made a list of people like in TV and film and Indian film mostly. Like, we weren't aiming too high, like celebrities, because we knew that with the budget and the amount of nudity that the actors had to be okay with, that most high profile actors wouldn't even, look at it. But so we had a list and made some offers, and a lot of people just said no right away on account of the sexual content. And then those who were interested, we had audition either through video or in person. We held auditions in New York in person. And with the two other main actors are actually based in LA. So they did tape. No, Makeda Declet, who played the role of
Maya.
Maya, she did a tape audition. She actually auditioned for a different role. And then we had, like, she auditioned for the role of Joanne, and then we ended up audition like casting her as Maya. And Jake Choi, who played Daniel, he is actually originally from Queens, so he happened to be in New York and was able to audition in person. And then for the other supporting characters, Veronica's friends, we had auditioned, and her other lovers and friends. And but yeah, three of the actors were from the West Coast, so we had to fly them in, and it was, pretty standard casting process in terms of indie film. Some direct offers made that were, either that were rejected. But Bill Irwin, who plays Veronica's dad, that was a direct offer accepted, and
Wonderful.
he was,
Yeah, that's very
casting is
cool.
fun. I love the casting process.
Yeah, it seems, I mean, I've never been involved in it, but it seems like something that you need to take a lot of energy into. And especially with a film like this, I mean, where you have, as much nudity and, sexuality within there, you need to be very comfortable with each other.
Yeah.
So that's huge.
That was the other, yeah, the other thing I'll mention is that at the auditions, whether they were remote, by Zoom or in person, I read with the actor. The casting director was present, and the other director I co-directed, and my friend Ben Foyer, who was collaborator Hughes, so they were in the room, and so I would read with the actors to see, if we have the chemistry and all that. So
Wonderful.
that's, that's how it went.
Yeah, fantastic. I mean, congrats, you guys. I mean, blew it out of the park. Blew it out of the water, knocked it out of the park, whatever. I'm not.
Casting, if you get casting right, like that's, if you have the casting right and the script is good, you're halfway there.
Yeah, absolutely. And because this is, a podcast where we love to highlight queer women, you are right. I don't see a lot of polyamory films out there. There were a couple of I'm grateful to work in our volunteer for the Seattle Queer Film Festival, and there have been more and more, indie triad kinds of relationship films coming out, which I think is great. But I would love to know your take about where does polyamory stand, or where does it have a place within the LGBTQIA plus community?
Yeah, it's kind of in the plus of it is in there, and
Mm-hmm.
it's I think it's been a debate for a long time, is polyamory queer? No, because it's not like a sexual orientation or gender identity or sexual identity. It's like a relationship choice, but then other people say that, well, I was born this way, right? I've been this way ever since I can remember, and like monogamy never made sense to me. So I think it is in the queer umbrella, because it's like not mainstream. It's not, if the mainstream is heteronormative monogamy, it's not part of that. So I guess in that sense, it is
Yeah, I
weird.
think there's an inherent queerness to it. And I mean, I say that as a very broad assumption, but I mean, like, queerness, at its root of, deviating from that norm, right? From the monogamous heteronormative norm. But then you also have, of course, like the pairings between people. And I guess, there's so many different types of pairings, and I guess within a triad, would you say that, like, let's say it's like two women and a man, there are some relationships in which those two women might never necessarily go on a date together. Would that be the case usually?
I mean, I wouldn't say usually, but
Sometimes.
yeah, there are all sorts of configurations, and there are people who identify as straight who are polyamorous, where it could have a V. It's not a triad, it's a V, where
Oh, there you go.
one man and two women, so both of the women are involved with the man but not with each other. A triad is where everyone is involved
Equal.
with yeah, equally with everyone else.
Thank you.
The different configurations and different terms. So yeah, you don't have to be queer to be poly, but poly is kind of queer.
I can absolutely agree with that. And have you experienced where there are, specifically queer only poly groups, like meetups and things like that within the community?
I'm sure that they exist. Well, there is a collective in New York City that is very queer, and they have events and parties, and they have like pansexual makeout parties, and where BDSM workshops, and it is specifically queer, and like there's a crossover between queer events and poly, but I wouldn't say that the two just kind of naturally go together, because if you're exploring your sexuality, you're open-minded, and like
Absolutely. They
yeah.
really, like you were saying, it's under the queer umbrella for sure. And I love that this film struck a really nice balance between showing a poly experience without being like, I don't know, poly 101, and like, hey, heteronormative, monogamous, straight, whatever. Like, this is exactly what a polyamorous, so how was that managed?
I was very aware of that from the very beginning, and I did not even like writing the script. There were at times where I was being too expositional, and I had to pull back. Like, I'm explaining too much and about what this is, and I don't want it to be condescending or pedantic in a way, educating the uninformed or the straight people who the straight monogamous people, and trying to convince them that this is a better way. That's not the point. That's not the point. And I don't believe that either. I support monogamy, and when it's done intentionally, consciously, and ethically, and all of that. So yeah, it was more just to make a movie that's a story about my experience of polyamory, and there are other experiences of polyamory, but this is mine. And to show that show all aspects of it. I mean, obviously I couldn't put everything together and everything into a 90-minute film, but enough to for people who are not familiar with it to have an understanding, to get a taste of it. And then people who are familiar with it, that, oh, that resonates. I get that.
Absolutely. You just brought up, the term ethical, within I think a lot of folks use ethical non-monogamy, that term. And Daniel is a huge test in this. So he's not the most ethical person. And I love when Maya at one point, she says he's like a kid in a candy store. And I think, that causes a lot of hurt feelings and trouble for Veronica and Maya. Can you speak more to his experience?
Yeah, I think it's a common thing. Like actually I was on another podcast, a queer podcast, where the guys were like, oh, it's like when someone is newly gay has just come out as gay, like these gay men, and like, oh, he just wants to do everything, and it's just insensitive, right? But they're not aware because they're just everything is so new and they just want to taste everything. So it's kind of like that. And I think Daniel's like coming out, he's like coming out as this, oh, there's more to my sexuality than I thought there was, like being monogamous all these years and being married and restricted. So yeah, it's not, it's like this is definitely based on part of my experience in a relationship, long-term relationship, partnership, marriage, and where the beginning was very much like that, where I brought him in and he didn't have the experience and was overwhelmed, and then to the point where it was hurting me because he wanted, he wanted more, and I had already been there. And so I, when two people are coming together and they're two different places in the journey, then there could be a friction.
Yeah, absolutely, because we have Veronica, who's very experienced, knows the rules, follows them most of the time. And
No one's perfect.
yeah, exactly. But then, there's something between her and Daniel that's like just so infatuating. And there is, at least in the beginning, there does, develop a really strong bond and love there. But yeah, I think whereas Veronica is, a veteran in this process, and Daniel's a new recruit, and he is totally overwhelmed. It was interesting to see that experience, and I've definitely experienced that myself. Not being Daniel, but like seeing it, seeing, my friends deal with similar situations. My poly friends, and it's really difficult because they think, yeah, it's going to be kind of like a free for all, and it's insensitive. And no, it's like the gayest thing ever, because like you have to talk and talk and talk and talk, and like it's like the most lesbian thing ever. So yeah, I definitely I felt for Veronica a lot in this film.
There are definitely a lot of assumptions and myths about polyamory for people who are not experienced with it, and they can, just think it's like a free for all, like you said, or like, oh, I can do whatever I want, or as long as we have this general sense of everything's open, like I can do whatever I want. But and there are people who do that, but intentionally, they're called like relationship anarchists. But generally, like most polyamorous relationships have some kind of structure and agreements between all parties.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because, well, maybe this is just me talking, but you don't want to hurt people at the end of the day. Like, you don't want to be a jerk. So.
It's inevitable. People get hurt no matter what,
True,
like
true.
Veronica says, no matter how hard you try, someone is always going to get hurt. Heartbreak is inevitable when you're falling in love, you're vulnerable and intimacy, and that's there's always a risk with that that you're going to get hurt. But as long as you're most of the time you have the intention and there's you're not lying, you're not behaving badly, like lying and cheating, and like maybe there's some miscommunication, there's a broken agreement here and there, but then you come together and you talk about it and you work it through.
Absolutely. Yeah, you need to process a lot when and be mindful of everyone. And I thought another relationship that was interesting is the relationship between Veronica and Maya. It seems to be, in the beginning, they are, very friendly with each other. They play together. But towards the end, their relationship sours, because of the tension, I think, that Daniel creates. Would you speak more to their relationship together?
I think it's not it's a friendship that's just like a sexual friendship that never quite they never I don't think they like reach the point where they fall in love with each other. It's more that Veronica wants to be closer to Maya in order to like equalize what's happening with Daniel. And so she feels like, oh, well, maybe if I can have a more intimate relationship there, I won't feel as jealous when she's with Daniel. And then it's, it can be very tricky between two women and the jealousies that arise are different than what am I saying? It's different than if they didn't know each other at all,
Yeah.
maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. Because they have this one area of familiarity, right? Where they meet at these parties and maybe they hang out outside of that. I'm just kind of, thinking what the characters would do, and they might, have sex with each other outside of that. But when a third party comes into play, yeah, it's kind of, I mean, it does change all the dynamics change, right? To something that's more of a, sexy friends with benefits situation to, oh, we are both having a relationship with this person and we would like to further this connection between us as well.
Yeah, because then there are threats that can surface, and where there's things happen where, well, like one person is not getting enough attention or is threatened by what she perceives as her partner giving the other woman more attention than to her, or there are all these trust issues that come up, and like, well, you were my friend, and that, and like, how could you do this? So there's like a betrayal. I mean, there was not a specific betrayal that happened. I'm not going to give it away, but there's like, there's, it wasn't like, Maya and Veronica had an agreement that Maya betrayed, that she broke an agreement. It wasn't like that, but it's more like, how could you be behaving in this way that is so insensitive to our friendship or our the connection that we had before he came along? Like, what's going on? Like, you're taking him, are you taking him away from me? Are you, there's all these stories that we invent that may or may not be true.
Veronica's revenge is also very funny. I won't get into specifics, but it does involve a toothbrush.
Definitely.
You know, it's something where from far away I can laugh at it and be like, oh man, girl, I feel you. But I'm sure in the moment, oh man.
I mean, jealousy can be intense, and it could motivate people to do things that they would not normally do. It's such a visceral experience, in my experience.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of the queer experience people talk about having like a second adolescence, and I think, not to like minimize that, but adolescence is tough. I have kids. I have a 12-year-old and 9-year-old, and boy, I am just reminded like every single day of that part that I blocked out of my head, but you learn so much. And even as an adult, when you come through this new experience and you're becoming so vulnerable, like you need to be all in, especially in a situation like this.
Yeah, for sure.
And I love the term compersion. I think that that's great. I would love to see a very funny hijinky film with for queer poly representation that has lots of compersion, but I'm sure that won't be necessarily might not sell very well because it's not like super dramatic, but
But it is, oh yeah, because that's the positive side, right? That's the opposite of jealousy, and no one wants to watch a movie or a TV series that's like, oh, like everything's great. Yeah, I'm so happy. I'm so happy that you're with her. And then, oh yes, absolutely, go on a trip with her or him. Like, I am fine. I'll just have my alone time. I'll just have my time, and I'm great.
It can exist and definitely does in real life. I've seen it, but
Yeah.
yeah, maybe a media piece. I mean, I would still love to see it anyway, just because I love all kinds of representation.
Well, it's there. I mean, it's even there in the film,
True.
and there is compersion there, and that's when it's just that it can't all be that,
Yes.
because
We're not one-dimensional, right?
even the people who are poly people who are really good at it and feel a lot of compersion, there are moments where they get triggered and they get jealous. So it's just human.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's so much to unpack. When you say the word trigger, yeah, there's some things that you don't really realize are going to be problems until they are. Yeah. What other stories about poly folks would you like to make, or are you working on any in particular?
I've actually been working on a series with a collaborator, someone who was not involved in this film, but we had some mutual connections, like this same producer. One of the producers, other producers on my film, also produced his film, and he had written a pilot script, a kind of about polyamory, a couple like first starting polyamory, and he shared it with me, and I was like, yeah, there's potential here, and so we ended up collaborating and rewriting. Wrote a whole new script or many characters, and so it's something that would be an ongoing series, an episodic dramedy, so it'd have a little bit more comedy in it and a lot of more of an ensemble piece, like a lot of series that you where you have multiple characters and many opportunities for drama and
Absolutely.
conflict.
We need to have something to move the story along. Yeah, need to have a story. Well, I'm looking forward to it.
I mean, I'm also like some of the characters, there's like a trans character and just having gay male couple with a trans man third, like different orientations, and that were not explored in the film.
Yeah, well, very cool. And we love to talk about on this podcast films that brought about our gay awakenings. So what film or piece of media kind of did that for you? Or even your poly
I
awakenings.
was, I mean, as a child, I was always like drawn to these movies about these plucky tomboys, girls,
Yeah, that makes sense.
like Annie, and there's this Disney film, Natty Gann, and yeah, there's something I think like that I was drawn to these girls. Like, I wasn't aware if, that it was a sexual thing, but I was
Yeah.
definitely like strongly attracted to these girls who are their gender was kind of blurry. And then like later on, the L word, I would say,
Yeah, that's big.
just the first see a couple seasons, first
Yeah.
few seasons of it. And I was watching that and feeling like, oh, I think I like when I first started exploring, and it wasn't until I was 24 that I had my first like same-sex experience. And so I think it was that, when did the L word first come out?
2004
2004, so
or 2003, around there.
yeah, so it was, I think that was a few years after I had started to
Except that part.
yeah to I started having experiences with women.
Well, fantastic. Yeah, I think, the L word was, for all its flaws, it was huge in helping a lot of women and non-binary folks and trans folks figure out their sexuality. That's fantastic. And then lastly, I'd love for you to tell us, where we can find your film and anything else you'd like to promote.
Sure. So you can go to lustlifelove.com, the website, and that will take you to all of the VOD platforms where the film can be rented or bought. And it's on Amazon, Google Play, Apple TV, iTunes, a lot of places. And you can follow the film on Facebook, Lust Life Love Movie, and Instagram, same thing, Twitter, LLL the film. And I am the underscore Stephanie Sellers on Instagram.
Fantastic. Love to add
Thanks.
you. Anything else you'd like to promote?
Yeah, I'll also say that I'm a singer, and there is a song in the film that I wrote the lyrics to, and it plays over the credits, although I did not record that. We had another singer do that version of the song, Girl Who Loves, but it's kind of a song about polyamory.
Yeah.
It's a classic jazz standard type of song, but like a 1940s swing
Yeah.
style, but it's kind of about polyamory. And but you can hear my version of it on Spotify, and as well as other music sites, Apple, iTunes, and all of that. And then I've recorded other jazz standards. So that's called Girl Who Loves. And if you just look up my name on Spotify, you'll find me.
I did listen. Very good voice.
Oh,
Love
thank
it.
you.
And I
Thank
love
you.
those jazz standards. They're just, I mean, they're timeless. So,
Yeah. And they're
and
always about love, right? Love and
yeah.
romance and broken hearts and
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it. And
It was a pleasure.
congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you so
All
much.
right.
And as for us, you can
Email us at galpalswatch@gmail.com or find us on Instagram at galpalswatch. Thanks for listening and keeping it hella gay!